Did you know the LA Kings have their own culinary partner? It's Superfood, celebrating 10 years and over a million meals served. Since 2020, the Kings have trusted Superfood to fuel their players. Now through Simply Lunch, you can bring that same performance-driven food to your office. Because when people eat better, they work better. Visit MySuperfood.com. That's MySuperFD.com. Or call 213-973-6145. Qualified companies can enjoy a free lunch for up to 10 managers.
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings. Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
All right, welcome back to All the Kings Men. I am Jesse Cohen. Joining me today, Jim Fox. How are you doing today, Jim?
Jesse, doing very well. Thanks for asking. Appreciate it.
John Kelly, how are you doing today, John?
I am doing great. Hopefully, you're having a great Thanksgiving. You are as well, and all of our viewers out there. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is a tremendous holiday. If for no other reason, you can have 8 different kinds of pie in one day, and nobody's going to look at you sideways.
Is there anything better than a nice pumpkin pie with a little whipped cream on top?
No.
I mean, I would argue apple pie, I'm not going to get into it. So every year we ask the top 10 questions facing the team for the upcoming season. Before this season, we did those 10 questions. Today is the quarter season check-in point. Fortunately, this year we have not only an extensive media availability with Ken Holland to rely on, but after Ken Holland spoke to the media, Jim Hiller also spoke to the media. So we've got not only the 22 games at the time of this recording played to talk about, but we also have pretty extensive comments from management. So we're just going to get into the questions. The first one's pretty easy. The question was, will the pending free agents sign extensions? Jim, Adrian Kempe signed his 8-year extension. I mean, there's other players who will need contracts in the offseason, but that was the big one. I feel like done and done.
Yeah, I think it was touched on by a lot of people. It had to get done because you're going to lose Kopitar. Mm-hmm. So that's going to bring some points down. As far as production-wise, it's not the same position, center versus wing, but at the same time, you have a proven scorer. You're losing a proven point producer. He's been with the Kings since he was drafted. He fits the team and the system because he's willing to sacrifice energy defensively as well as offensively. So it's just a perfect fit. And I don't think they could have gone much further either. Adrian looked like he was not bothered. It was on the back of everyone's mind. Get it done.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it had become a distraction, John, but at least now it never will be, right? Like, it's over. We know he's going to be here for 8 years, provided everything goes the way you want it to. Done and done.
Yeah, I think I said during our initial conversation that it takes two parties to get a deal done. So hypothetically, if Kempe wanted to explore the market, there's nothing the Kings could have done. At the same time, you've had a lot of UFAs sign contracts in the last 2 months, including Connor McDavid, who took way less than market value. But, you know, other players like Natchez and Jack Eichel in Vegas signed contracts. So the market, I think, was fluctuating. And I really think that this deal, you know, $10.6 million and change for 8 years is it's a lot of money, number one, but it's also a fair value for both the player and the team. So hopefully Kempe can finish his career as a King, but if there was going to be a distraction, that is now off the table, and that's fantastic.
$11 million is where I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. That's where I thought it was going to be, just a little bit underneath, so the team gets a little bit of a break. John, I think you touched on something that is league-wide, and you know, the Kopitar thing, you got to replace him, probably replace him with a free agent. But free agents are signing now. It's a shift in the market. It's a shift in the industry where it seems like fewer and fewer free agents will be available to be signed.
One of the things I like about the contract is there aren't many wrinkles to it. It's pretty straightforward. It's 8 years. It's an AAV of 10.625. If you want to, you know, take out a fine-tooth comb and go through it, you can look at the trade protection and where it breaks down and, you know, the bonus
signing
structure
bonuses,
and all that.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, it's an 8-year deal. It's the max allowable that he can sign. Because of his age, it's basically going to take him, if not to the very end of his career, to a point in his career where maybe there'll be a year or two left. you know, Connor McDavid, you mentioned his contract. There's, what was it, 2 years, 3 years long? So we're going to have this conversation again. A lot of guys, you know, have just built in weird wrinkles to it. This one is just straightforward. 8 years, he's here.
And it does change next year, correct, where it goes max 7 years
yes,
as opposed
right.
to 8 years. So,
correct. Yeah.
So Adrian gets that extra year mm-hmm. that maybe if he did go to the summer, he would lose that.
Yeah,
maybe.
And for anybody who doesn't follow the CBA closely, Jim's referring to the fact that next year there will be a new collective bargaining agreement and 7 years will be the max. So that's done now. And we, I don't remember who asked, but somebody asked Ken Holland, you know, about Brandt Clark because he will also yep. need a new, and he said, we've already begun talking to the agent. So,
but he, as we know, is an RFA. Way
yeah,
different,
totally
way different,
different
situation.
So, but. So that was question number one. Question number two, will the Kings get the same goaltending as last season? John, we'll start with you. Everybody has acknowledged that the team maybe stumbled out of the gate, but if you throw out the first 3 to 5 games, Darcy Kemper's been amazing so far.
Yeah, he has been fantastic. And Anton Forsberg, to me, you know, maybe one or two games, he didn't play his best hockey, but backup goaltending is a tough spot. It's a tough position to be a backup goaltender. And I think overall he's done a good job. And I think, if you throw it the first week of the season where the penalty killing was really bad, they were taking way too many penalties, and they had a tough schedule. Let's face it, you start with Colorado, Vegas, and Winnipeg. That's the three of the top teams in the West going into the season. So I think if you throw it the first, you know, 7-10 days, I think the goaltending overall has been what we expected. It's been very good.
I hate to say it, I'm going the other way.
Okay.
The last game that I can speak about is the Boston game. I think the overtime goal was a stoppable shot. Mm-hmm. I know who shot it. The leading goal scorer in the NHL shot it. But I think there's been some leaky goals. I think the Kings system is built on a goaltender making the stops he should make, and he doesn't have to make the fantastic ones. I think Darcy Kemper's made fantastic ones, but I think there's been some leaky ones. And that's just, and Forsberg also, probably more so. So I'm just looking at the home road record. The biggest difference is save percentage. I've been going through the numbers and trying to find a difference between home and road, and they are so small. There's nothing you can except save percentage. Mm-hmm. Now, that means it's pretty good on the road, not as good at home. Just leaky. I think Darcy was the most consistent player the Kings had last year. And, was it Detroit? There was a bad angle goal, short side. There, just those types of things. Now, that happens once every 20 games, that's fine. I'm being probably a little bit harder on. That's the way I feel.
So to this point, Darcy Kemper's played 15 games. I'm pulling this from NHL.com, and he's got a .906 save percentage and a 2.38 goals against. Now, those are the only numbers I know how to easily check, and I know there are more complicated goaltending numbers. I don't remember what his numbers were last year.
92%.
Okay, they're better than that. But I, you know, to John's point about Forsberg having maybe one or two games where he could have liked to play better. For every one of those, there's a game where he, I think, plays incredible. So I mean, and Jim, the Boston goal, like yes, but in my mind, my only rebuttal is, well, it was overtime and they only scored one goal, the Kings, that is. So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Well, like,
but are we talking about the offense or the goaltending?
Well, the goaltending. That's fair. Totally fair.
I've done it before, and I get a little too specific. I categorize the goals, mm-hmm. I put that one stoppable. I don't put it bad. It's not a bad goal. It's a stoppable situation. It becomes an overtime, so it means a game-winning or game-losing situation. And that's, again, I don't think that's the only one. Mm-hmm. I think there's been more. And that's the classification fit something that...
I mean, he definitely, and it's... no fault of whatever he's doing this season, but last year Darcy Kemper was a Vezina finalist. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're seeing Vezina finalist goaltending this year, so I guess ipso facto, it's not as good as it was last year.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
And I'm more on the consistency mm-hmm. issue of, again, stoppable goal, bad goal, the one goal I was talking about earlier, I think it was Detroit at home. Bad, bad angle, way down low. Ended up being a very close game, and it ends up, and there's been more where it's going through him, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, that type of thing. So, and I'm speaking more about Darcy because he's played most of the games, yeah. and he is the number one guy. I don't think Forsberg has lived up to what they thought he was going to be, hoped he was going to be yet. But as John's touching on, it's a tough position to get going if you're not playing a lot.
Well, unfortunately, there's, again, time of this recording, 60 games left on the schedule. So plenty of time to turn it around.
Correct.
The next question's a double-edged sword. And it was, will Drew Doughty rebound from his injury last season? I would argue, John, that he had. But now we have a new injury, which didn't know about when we wrote these questions.
Well, yeah, obviously way different. I think in watching Doughty night in, night out for the first time in my career, my hockey life, I think he's been very good. And to me, at age 38, to play 23 minutes a night and, you know, kill penalties and, you know, maybe second power play here and there, I think he's played very well. So Jim saw him obviously last year after he got hurt. You know, I talked to Drew in camp, Jim, as you know, and we talked to him that he had basically one or two practices after his injury, and he goes and plays great in the Four Nations tournament. So, you know, he's such a competitor, such a smart hockey player, and I think he's had a very good year.
Yeah, mobility was the only thing I was looking at because I think I've seen Drew long enough to know that if he's mobile, he's going to get the job done. The mobility was back. It was back as good as ever, and based on the results of testing at camp, maybe the best. His mobility has been in a long time because he not only had the improvement after the surgery, but he had, from what everyone says, the best testing he's ever done at camp.
One of the so never enjoy it when a player gets hurt, but I thought the 5 seconds following, you know, his current injury when he got hit on the foot, the fact that he was obvious, he had to have been in pain. He hasn't played since that, but he still had the presence of mind to get up and break up a scoring chance through that, what had to have been excruciating pain. Like, to me, that's just a perfect encapsulation of who Drew Doughty is and who he was, how he was playing up until that point.
Drew shifted his mindset. He used to be, you know, the two-way defenseman. I think now 90% in his head is shut down. And he's always had that part of his game. Mm-hmm. But I think he's, you know, you get a little bit older, you're not on the first power play anymore, you understand your numbers are going to come down, and he's just shifted even further into shutdown.
Yeah, and more on that point, Jesse, we obviously were doing that game in Ottawa, and not only did he battle after getting hit on the foot on the ice, when he got to the bench, he was in excruciating pain and, you know, tried to stand up, tried to sort of shake it off. And then we had a TV timeout, Jim, and we were watching Drew the entire 90-second TV timeout. And he was doubled over in agony. And he had to be on the bench for, what would you say, 10 minutes or so, trying to, you know, is the pain going to go away? Can I feel my foot, et cetera? He's a tough guy. And then obviously he realized the pain wasn't going away and there was a bigger issue. And then obviously he didn't come back in the game. But man, he must be a really tough player.
Yeah, the x-ray machines are right there beside the locker room in Ottawa, like most of the buildings. So I assume they took an x-ray. I assume they saw a break somewhere. The good news is, and of course I'm not a doctor, it does not appear to be what you would, a weight-bearing bone in that he was in a boot. He was walking. So they have to protect. They have to let it heal. But obviously what happened to him previously was much worse.
Probably similar to the Kopitar injury, quite honestly.
Yes.
Yeah. A couple of weeks.
Yep. Can you get comfort in your boot?
Right.
In your skate? Does it fit in? The equipment managers, Darren Granger, you know, they can do so much with skates and they make little bubbles in there so that you can, so hopefully that'll happen.
The next question, the Drew Doughty question rolls right into it, was what will the D-Corb minutes distribution be? And part of that question was, you know, new players, Dumoulin and CeCe. Brant Clark, a lot was, you know, talked about in the offseason. They traded Jordan Spence. Vladislav Gavrikov goes to New York. So in Drew Doughty's absence, we don't necessarily know what it will look like moving forward. So far, I think in two games, Brant Clark has been the minutes leader among the defense anyway. But, you know, so far this season, all strengths, and this is all 22 games, so I'm not subdividing by chunks or whatever. Mikey Anderson leads the way with 430 minutes. Drew Doughty right behind him with 428. Dumoulin and Clark right behind them, and then Edmondson and CeCe not far behind Brandt Clark, but fifth and sixth in position. And I don't get the sense, Jim, that they have necessarily settled on pairs, even with a healthy Drew Doughty.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there, Jesse. I think, first of all, I think that recently, you know, Brandt Clark's ice time is affected by the score more than anyone's. Mm-hmm. So the last couple we've been trailing, so his numbers go through the roof. The first game that Momo played, Mo Vrari comes in, I was looking after two periods, and it was, other than Mo Vrari, the other five guys were within 15 seconds of each other, all five, and then the third trailing, Brandt Clark just mm-hmm. went ahead. So, but I'm going to agree with you. I'm not sure. I think we're going to get to it later on the specifics of some players, but... yeah, I'm not sure if they're settled in yet.
But even if Drew Doughty's healthy at even strength, it seems pretty clear Anderson and Doughty is the preferred pair, both of the players and the coaching staff. After that, I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm not going to call it an experiment, but when they did go and move Anderson away from Drew, mm-hmm. Mikey's and Jim Hiller, I think, hit it right on the nose. They had to get back to a situation where Mikey Anderson knows that he is critical to the success of the team. And his role dropped off a little bit. Not only the time on ice, just that feeling of, you know, get out there and win the game defensively for us. Again, part of the identity of the group. So that's was put back together with Drew, but now with the injury.
Well, and John, if Jim is correct that Drew Doughty is seeing himself more as a shutdown player now than a two-way player, Mikey Anderson helps that effort, right? Mikey Anderson is part of a shutdown pair. Mikey Anderson is a productive part of a two-way pair. But if Drew Doughty is focusing on shutdown, Anderson makes him better and he makes Anderson better. I mean, that's the pair. Doughty's healthy.
Yeah, I've liked that pairing. I really have liked the Edmondson-Clark pairing. Mm-hmm. I've always been a big fan of having one defending player and one offensive-minded defenseman. And I know the Kings don't have, you know, a Cale Makar or, you know, they don't have an abundance of guys that can put the puck in the net. Doughty, as you said, Jim, over the years has obviously been a really good two-way defenseman, but at his age now is focusing more on defense. I think what was surprising early on was the CeCe-Dumoulin pairing did not really – or was it CeCe-Dumoulin early on?
Yes.
Yeah, and it didn't really work.
First five, I think.
First three games, I think, and then they went away from it. And then they've come back to it. It's been a lot better. So I think they are still experimenting. But I think overall, you know, the 6D that they've used for the most part, not counting Mo Vrari, has been pretty good. And I've liked the pairings, but I'm sure it will be in flux for most of the year, just like every other team.
Recent game against Boston, because of the makeup of the Bruins, Edmondson, Anderson together in a complete shutdown mm-hmm. role. Blake, our stats guy, after two periods, gave me every single shift that Pasternak was on the ice, it was Edmondson and Anderson.
Yeah.
Again, it changed in the third because you're trailing. You know, that Boston scored first in that third period, yeah. So then you're chasing the game a little bit, and they moved it around. But that was the first time, I think, they really went with that specific change against a specific team.
So to your point, John, Edmondson and Clark, despite the fact that I read out the minutes for each individual defenseman, Edmondson and Clark have the most minutes as a pair.
Right.
Just because, you know, we've got Dumoulin and Doughty, Dumoulin and CeCe, Anderson and CeCe, Anderson and Doughty, Dumoulin and Clark, Anderson. You know, we've got all sorts of permutations. But yeah, Edmondson and Clark, that's the pair. And we've heard that from management for a few years now, that they really like that pair. They like, and we've heard it from Clark and we've heard it from Joel Edmondson, that the two of them complement each other well. So we'll see now, especially with Drew Doughty out, and we'll get to some more questions.
And Drew, because of the right-handed, it kind of screws up that mm-hmm. righty-lefty. Again, when you're talking about Edmondson and Clark, you have the shutdown, the puck carrier, the lefty-righty. It's the perfect.
Yeah. The next question for me gets a pretty simple answer. The question is, will the top nine forward chemistry continue? And the answer is just no. Mm-hmm. They have split up the lines. They've jumbled the lines. They've shuffled the lines. And the reason that question was in there is that for the last, how many games after the trade deadline? 32-ish. Once Kuzmenko came in, the team played in a way that was so perfectly balanced with those top nine players. And if that was going to roll into this season, this team, that's the peak version of this team. And Jim, it just hasn't.
And it starts with Kuzmenko. Mm-hmm. It starts there. The center position and the lack of actual goals, it's, you know, you'd have to really sit down. Again, I think you have to take into consideration what the players are asked to do and the identity of the team. And there's a lot of focus on checking, a lot of focus. So it means you're expending a lot of energy. I know I've mentioned it multiple times. Jesse brought it up last year. You know, does that energy that you give to defense take away from what you're doing offensively because you don't have it when you get the puck back? And I think that was one of the very smart insights. But Kuzmenko in itself, that is thrown off the top nine because he's been a healthy scratch recently. And the communication, I hope, because I felt Jim Hiller did a fantastic job with Kevin Fiala. Took him a couple years, but he got Kevin to be playing a productive, less risky style. And now I think it might be the same type of thing with Kuzmenko.
Yeah, I think also I agree with you with Kuzmenko. Obviously playing a lot of games on the top line with Kopitar and then healthy scratch comes back in the lineup. You know, a player like him to me, if he had more power play success, and he does have a couple of power play goals, but in watching him lately on the power play, including on the 5-on-3 the other night, he's not shooting the puck. So to me, he's a player right now that doesn't have confidence. And if he scores power play goals, and if players like Kempe and Fiala score power play goals, it translates into 5-on-5. So to me, I don't mean to, you know, blame the power play for all the lack of scoring at times. Hey, the record's pretty good. They've had some injuries. But I think if they had more power play success, it would lead to more 5-on-5 scoring success. And I think Kuzmenko is probably the number one guy that I would look to that really right now does not play with confidence. He's not shooting the puck. So that to me is an issue.
And you have the, you know, let's spread it around a little bit. Offensively, again, the team's record is pretty good.
Right.
The internal numbers, the analytics are really good. But Warren Fogel, admittedly, has had a slow start. He admitted himself, took him a while to get going. Then he picked up the injury. I think he's probably playing the best now, you know, recently, where the big body's getting in down low. And then you have, and just to the question, Jesse, of the top nine, you have Perry producing like a top nine player. And right now he's on the fourth, you know, he gets the power play, but he's, and Joel Armia. So they've kind of mixed up. And perhaps Joel is playing as much as he is because he's earned it, but also because other guys haven't.
Laferriere also stumbled a bit out of the gate. So you had one guy on every line.
I think he was
maybe not playing perfectly at the
start. I think
Laferriere
was hurt earlier.
Yeah. There's apologies in advance for this. There's a poem I'm quite fond of. It has different iterations. I'll give you the short version. For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the rider was lost. For want of a rider, the battle was lost. For want of a battle, the kingdom was lost. All for the want of a nail. And it just shows you that, like, you know, we can sit here and we can say, oh, well, this player X isn't playing great. But if player X isn't playing great, line one isn't playing great. If line one isn't playing great, line two is easier to defend. If line one and two are easier to defend and not going well, line three isn't as offensively potent. All of a sudden, more pressure on your special teams. If your goaltending has a bad night, you know, just to hit the nail on the head, pardon the pun, the kingdom, you know, is jeopardized all for want of a nail.
John hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Power play.
Yeah, well, yes. Well,
I didn't know we were working with Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes.
That's very nice. That was nice.
So then let's just get to it since you said the magic words. The next question is how will the special teams perform? And I just skipped a question, which was how will the fourth line be trusted and contribute? But I feel like we talked about Perry and Armia. So let's just get into it because that's the penalty kill, no problem.
No problem.
Great.
Yeah, early on it was not good, but they were taking way too many penalties. Yeah. And now their numbers are way down, and their penalty killing has been superb in the last month or so. Really good.
The penalty kill since October 17th is 87.5%, second in the league, only behind Pittsburgh. Wow. And I don't even know how many shorthanded goals, but I mean, a lot.
I'd say at least three or four. Yeah,
I think Armia has two by himself.
Right.
Three.
There you go.
Well, okay. Total.
Yes, but yeah, shorthanded. So, I mean, the penalty kill is fine, but the power play, you know, one of the rules I have when I do these sorts of things, John, is that if try to keep it broad. But once somebody from inside the organization opens the door to, you know, more pointed criticism, then it's fine. Jim Hiller was pretty pointed about the power play. It has not, it has moved from not good to hurting the team.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And it seems every, you know, wherever I've been in my career watching games, the power play gets a lot of focus. And for the most part, it's hard to score in this league, as we know. But to me, a power play, when it's not going well, I like to simplify things. I like to see, get the puck to the points, have one-timer options, have a net front presence, and shoot the puck. And I'm not seeing nearly enough of a first shoot mentality on the Kings. And, you know, we've talked about it many nights on our broadcast, and a lot of announcers do. When you shoot the puck, you know, good things can happen. Number one, you can score. Number two, you could get a rebound. Or you can create chaos after the shot. So when you pass it around the perimeter for 60 seconds, 70 seconds, and don't shoot the puck, guess what? You're not going to score. So I would like to see them simplify it and do those three things, and maybe they'll get some success, and maybe it can build on it.
The history, and Jim Hiller's talked about it, is it was so good last year. And it wasn't simple last year, John. It was intricate. It was it was so...
But that's unusual, right?
Unusual. And Kuzmenko was the number one factor for that. He came in, and he became the conductor. He was moving down low, moving out high, shooting when needed. You know, just you have to respect that shot threat on his offside, wrist shots through traffic, those types of things. So it wasn't simple. There was a lot of creativity on that power play. Change this year just hasn't been there. So now they're looking. And the most recent game I can talk about was the Boston game. And Jesse, I think that's what you're alluding to. As we're sitting here, we're waiting for practice. If there's not a change, then that's going to surprise a lot of people. Meaning I don't expect five forwards anymore. And trying to find the shot threat, trying to find that. Who it would be, I don't know. Brant Clark doesn't seem to have that shot. He would be the guy I would put there because of his mobility. But I think you need the, John touched, you need the shot threat on a power play. And the Kings don't have that right now. And just the other thing in the back of my, and man, it was clearer than clear in Boston, against Boston. When Boston retrieved puck shorthanded, they became a five-on-five mentality. They attacked because they knew.
And Boston's best chances came on the Kings' power play.
So, and that's, I think in the back, of it, it's a novel concept. It worked fantastically last year, the five forwards. But I think certainly in the back of the minds of a couple of those forwards on the ice, they're now thinking, I've got to defend, as opposed to thinking, let's attack, because the other team is just going.
This is, maybe it's just me, but like the penalty kill and the power play are mirror images of each other this year, because the penalty kill, I think I said, what was it, 87.5, but the net PK rating, which is PK efficiency plus shorthanded goals, is number one in the league at 95.8, because the Kings are not only killing penalties, they're scoring while they're killing penalties. Meanwhile, their net power play percentage, which is flip side, is worst in the league at 7.3 because their power play percentage is 12.7, but they're also giving up shorthanded goals. And at this point, John, I would be happy with them not scoring shorthanded goals if they would stop ceding momentum, never mind goals. But like when the other team is putting together odd man rushes on you when you're on the power play, that's how you lose games, and that's how you lose playoff series to me.
Yeah, I was going to say that the shorthanded goals against, I wonder how much it affects the confidence of the power play, especially the players up top like Kempe, who has given up a few pucks on shorthanded goals. He's not the only one. But it doesn't look like a very confident power play to me right now. That can change. Hopefully it will change. And Jim, I guess the question from me to you Not that I'm the host now, but, you know, I wasn't here last year. You were. So why was it so good in the last 25 games with Kuzmenko? And as you said, it was a lot of tic-tac-toe passing, a lot of seam passes that worked. Why has that not transferred into this season? With the same five players on the ice?
Well, the same, no. For the most part, Corey Perry has been...
Okay, but he wasn't here for six games either, right?
Right. It's just, I would assume it's opposition scouting.
Yeah.
So then you finally have a body of work to take a look at. It's not the middle of a season where you're going from one team to the next.
Yeah.
So now the Kings are preparing. They've figured out a way to probably neutralize the spark plug, which was Kuzmenko. So they've neutralized him, and that's hurt the rest.
Yeah.
It feels to me, Jim knows more about hockey or has forgotten more about hockey than I'll ever know, but it feels to me when you're watching it that teams know where the shots are coming from on the power play. And so it just feels like now there's always somebody in front of it.
That is the goal of the penalty kill, and I would say the reverse. Every penalty kill knows where the shot's going to be given up.
Mm.
Your goal in your scouting, okay, you're going to give up this shot. That's what you're hoping for. You're going to take away the other stuff. And last year, John, earlier on, in the Kempe was used as a one-timer. And the Kings felt that the other team was taking him away so much that they just moved him out of the one-time position. And him and Fiala had that interchangeable, where one time it would be Fiala shooting it, then 10 seconds later, it would be Kempe. They would move around so much. It looks to me, if there is a... Thanks for that question. Just now I'm thinking about it. It looks to me that Kempe is just so much now, so much in that top quarterback position,
mm-hmm.
where last year they were exchanging, moving, changing positions. And now it just seems like Adrian is fixed there. And it's hurting his game and maybe hurting the rest of the power.
Yeah, and that's why I said I personally like to have two one-time options. The left shot on the right side and the opposite on the other side, because let's face it, these teams are so well prepared. The pre-scouting is incredible. You know, we see the coaches; they're on their computers all the time. So you have to have multiple options on a power play, and right now it seems like they're taking away that Fiala one timer, and as you said, Kempe at the top is a great player, but he's not getting power play goals either. So.
Well, he's your most dangerous player, and they've got him at the top, usually at the top left point. No one-time opportunity as far away from the net as you can be on the power play.
I find him in the middle of the ice more.
Yeah.
At the top.
Yeah,
I do too.
So he's not getting to the side where the one-timer, mm-hmm. even from the blue line, would be effective. He scored the one-timer in St. Louis, right?
Yeah.
But he was
yeah.
way high above the top of the circle.
Yeah.
It was an overtime, was it?
Yeah, that's 3-on-3.
And it was 4-on-3.
It was a rush goal, too, was it not?
No, it was one-timer. Whether it was the overtime one, it was high. It was man advantage. Not sure.
Yeah, you're right. It was 4-on-3.
And it was above above the top of the circle, which is really high out. Again... It's more fixed now where he is. He's there. And the interchangeable position on the power play was really effective last year. They went into the zone, and they just moved around. And I don't think there was a plan. It was like, if this spot's what you go, whoever gets there first, then you change, you move around. And they're going to try it. And it kind of fits the identity too, right? If the Kings are a defensive team, the penalty kill should be good, and the power play should be the weakness. Should be. Jim knows the numbers, Jim Hiller, and as far as I'm aware, our shooting percentage just overall as a team is way down.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about that last year with Fiala. Fiala was struggling, and then boom, he took off. So the PDO, save percentage that you have, shooting percentage that you have is really bad for the Kings, and most people feel, and I'm very, very optimistic, that even if that creeps up to the norm, the Kings are just going to win more games just by sheer numbers.
I mean, I am by no means a mathematician, but they have to, right? Like, that's how math works. If one number goes up, the other ones should. I was sort of surprised, though, after the Boston game. And again, we're recording this the Monday of the 23rd, right before practice. So there will be other games before anybody watches this, and there will be other practices. But, John, I was a little taken back at how frank Coach Hiller was about the power play in the post-game press conference. I mean, he was there were no words minced at all. He was he didn't come out and say we're abandoning the five forward power play, but he said changes, you know, may have to be made, and he said it's hurting the team. Like he was
Yeah, I like his candor because to me, number one, you can't fool the players and you can't fool the fans. So when you see the numbers especially in the last, say, 3 weeks, it's pretty obvious that right now they need to change things. And they could come back to the five-forward power play in a month, and it could go gangbusters. I don't know. But for whatever reason, I think that they've just been, again, too pass-happy, and they're lacking confidence. And I was actually sitting behind the net the other night. I wasn't doing the game. Josh was doing the game with you, and I was sitting right there on that 5-on-3, and the puck kept coming to Kuzmenko, and all he was looking, trying to make that perfect seam pass, and he was not a shooting option, and they didn't have a shooting mentality on the power play. So I think, again, it's confidence, and they got to shoot the puck.
And if I can just jump in, it's on a broader topic, because I've been asked many times, and I know on social I'm going to do 55 games this year. That's part of a plan. And I appreciate people reaching out when I was on the road and not doing the games. And I hope you're okay. Everything's good. John's going to miss. Josh is going to do 10 games, I believe.
Right, yeah.
So
we're all good.
It's yeah. Part of a plan. And I just want to get it out on this.
Yep, sure.
You know, a chance to put it out there again. Because there was a press release at the beginning of the year. But, you know, I don't expect everyone to be reading those press releases. And just a little bit of a reminder that it's just part of a plan.
Yeah. And also, don't ask me because I don't always know.
Because you don't know the plan.
No. And like, just throwing it out there. If Patrick O'Neill's not hosting a game, I also don't know why. So don't ask me about that either.
Right.
He's usually in Paris.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate it.
Or doing
it.
But
I don't know. Yeah, and even if I do know, half the time I'm not allowed to say. So anyway, moving on to the next question. You guys had a lot of pushback for me on this one at the start of the season. But now that Adrian Kempe has a new contract, I'd like to kind of revisit it in a different setting. Question was, will anyone besides Anze Kopitar wear the C this season? Now, even if the answer to that is no, Jim, with Adrian Kempe now signing his 8-year extension, we know he'll be around. We know what he means to the franchise. We know symbolically and, you know, strategically what he means on the ice. Even if he doesn't wear the center, or the captain's C, excuse me, is there any chance of, you know, and we're seeing it right now with Byfield, Fiala, and Kempe as a line. We don't know how long that line will stay together, but we're starting to see tiny little signs of what the future might look like in a post-Kopitar reality. It's not a question. I'm just trailing off.
No, it's, I'm just really, and Adrian, he said, I'm proud of myself. I'm so proud of him. Because when he came in again, he was a center. They moved him to wing. He was first-round pick. When you see him skate, you go, wow, this is a masterpiece.
And he's about 215 pounds.
Yeah, and John, in the 4 playoff series, I think it was the first one of the 4 against Edmonton, I was just, he took strides. He became a gritty, in-your-face, hard-to-play-against, graceful. That's oxymoronic, right? And he was doing so much, and they were on him. Edmonton was going at him, and he was giving it right back. And I thought, and that's just evolved. So he's at that point now where he is a total player. Inside the room, I'm not sure. Very accessible to us, but I think the guy he shares the A with now in Holman Road, Mikey Anderson, since he joined the Kings, everyone said cap material, just the way he handles himself. So how that all shakes out, I'm not sure, but the guy in the lead would be Kempe, right?
Yeah.
He's been here longer.
And I mean, I understand why the answer is no to the original question, John, but it's, you know, one of the reasons that I love watching basketball media, you don't, may not know this about me, is that I don't know anything about basketball, so I can just watch people talk about
that
basketball.
That makes three of us.
And I, but I just go like, okay, that sounds right, right? Like I just, I take it all at face value because I don't have any opinions on it because I don't know anything about it. But one of the things that drives me a little bit crazy about basketball media is they always seem to be looking to tomorrow and ignoring today. It's always like, well, who's going to get drafted? Who's going to be good 5 years from now? And they don't even care who's winning the championship this year. So I don't want to get trapped in the like, well, what's it going to look like in 25, you know, 26, 27 when we're in the middle of this season?
Who won last year?
I don't actually know. I mean, I do.
You're proving your point.
If I have to stop and think about it.
Was it Oklahoma City?
I have no idea.
Oh, in basketball, yes, it was Oklahoma City.
That's what I'm asking.
I thought you were asking me in who won the Stanley Cup.
Well, I hope you would know that.
This is a hockey show, Jesse.
I mean, oh my God, I'd actually have to stop and think about it.
Bob.
Oh, right, Florida, of course, back to back. But with, you know, we know that Kopitar is retiring, right? And he said he didn't want it to be a distraction, but it has kicked off all of these conversations. And so Jim mentioned, you know, Mikey Anderson is a potential captain candidate. And all I could think of, Jim, when somebody suggested that was the Nordstrom Kings, where Mattias Nordstrom was the captain and Ziggy Palfy was arguably the best player. If Adrian Kempe is your best player and Mikey Anderson's your captain, that's a totally different version of the Kings that we haven't seen in 20 years.
You want your captain to be your best player, I think.
Sure.
Can I disagree with you?
You can.
Yeah. I think it should be your best leader on and off the ice. Mm-hmm. But I'm not a former player. You are.
I think that's what I'm saying. You want your best player to be your best leader.
Yeah, well, you do, but I'll give you an example.
It doesn't always happen.
I'll give you an example. Like, to me, Adam Lowry in Winnipeg is an exceptional captain. Third-line center iceman, plays the right way, tough, scores some goals. He's not their best player, but he probably is their best leader. So, what about Doughty? I mean, the guy has bled black and silver and whatever for his whole career.
What are we going on, 8 or 9 years?
I don't know. I watched Drew Doughty play. He plays the right way every single night. I don't need to tell you that or anyone else. He is heart and soul Kings, always will be. I don't think there's any, and fans might say, you know, what about, you know, the fact that he's 38 years old, he won't be around forever. So what? So he's only the captain for 2 or 3 years. I don't think it's the end of the world. I really don't.
I don't think it's the end of the world either, but I think a common way to go, which is not always right, is that it's a new chapter. Mm-hmm. And if it is a new chapter, then you want a new leader. And I would go with Drew. Hey, we're splitting atoms here. But
yeah. So, I mean, it's amplified by the fact that Andrei Kopitar missed, was 4 games, I think, with that injury. Not a tremendous amount of the season, but, you know, Jim, I was thinking back to the 92-93 season where Wayne Gretzky missed a tremendous amount of that year. And, John, during that season, Luke Robitaille wore the captaincy. Yeah. And I don't think anybody viewed it as a disrespect to Wayne Gretzky. Now, Andrei Kopitar is not going to be out for 60 games or whatever it was. But if late in the season there are opportunities to, whether it's try different lines, try different lineups. I don't know. I just feel
when Wayne got hurt that time,
It
was career threatening.
Yes, no, he was out for a very long time.
Thoracic back issues, and they were really, it was unusual. They didn't know what was going on. They found, obviously, a remedy. But I think the concern then was, man, he might not even be back.
Yeah. So that's why they gave the seat to Luke. See, I don't, go ahead.
Luke, Curry, and Sandstrom played as a line. They were phenomenal. Yeah. Oh, man, they filled the net. It was really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, but as we know, to me, when a captain gets hurt, you don't give the seat to player B just because he's hurt. I mean, that's just, it's not the way it works.
What triggered it in my mind was, I think it was the Boston game was the first time we saw it, where on the pregame lineup sheet, the number one line was listed as Byfield, Fiala, and Kempe. And the number two line was more Kopitar and Kuzmenko. Now, it doesn't matter. It's just a lineup sheet. At the end of the game, you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum. It doesn't, the line distinctions are made up, right? Your number one line.
Andy Murray had a green line and a gray line and a blue line and a white line. So,
but it caught my eye that, like,
The thing, just like, and you sent us before we did our first segment, beginning of the year, you sent us questions. I saw that quote. That was the first time I thought of it when I saw it then, and I have not thought about it since we
fair
sit
enough.
Right here. Who's going to be the captain, change the captain, has not entered my mind. at all.
I mean, it shouldn't. We're still in the middle of this season. Like, no, but I don't want to look just, too far into tomorrow.
Yeah. I think overall, big picture, I think fans and maybe media make too big a deal out of it. I think that Jim's obviously a former player. When you're in the room or you're on the ice, I think the players know who the leaders mm-hmm. are, and you don't need a C or an A to say, oh, I'm a leader.
Yeah.
I think it's more by your actions. I really do.
I'll bring it back to when I played. Terry Ruskowski was the captain here.
Yeah.
And he was not our best player. And he was phenomenal.
There you go.
He was that heart and soul guy. But again, you would want it to be your top guy. But yeah. Roscoe, man, that was kind of a third line center.
Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah.
But you could just tell everything he did was team oriented.
Yeah.
So the next question then is what happens with the rest of the Pacific? And Jim, I have referred to this season as a bizarro season already. There was a stat on the screen. I didn't hear what you guys were talking about, but I'm sure you're familiar with it, that 30% of games in the NHL this season have gone to overtime, which mm-hmm. is some kind of record. The parity in the standings is incredible. I'm looking at the Pacific Division trends on Money Puck right now, and it's tightly bunched together, and there have been no big swings yet. Now, we're only 22 games into the season at the time of this recording, but still, I don't even know. Like, I have no idea what to predict.
I guess the teams I look at, Calgary and Anaheim, mm-hmm. for I think Calgary's creeping back in, right?
And, yeah, they're on.
And Anaheim has not dropped off.
Right.
So that's, you know, I think everyone was concerned about Calgary coming in, and now they're getting back into it. San Jose is taking more points. We knew that was going to happen. Anaheim probably still the consistency they've shown. And that has to do with the roster, the drafting. You know, they had some down years. You got to be bad to be good. But the number one is when Joel Quenneville comes in, and you, whether he wears them or not, he's got those rings somewhere, you listen to him. You don't second guess him. You're a young player. You've been coming in. You're trying to get your footing in the NHL, and you're trying things. You're in the back of your head is, what do I have to do? And now it's, what does the coach want me to do? And then you don't ask any questions.
I think going into the season, and I was on record on the show here, Jesse and Jim, I felt that Anaheim would be a better team. No way did I think they would score the way they have mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. be at the top of the division for most of the season. I thought San Jose would be better, but nowhere near, you know, above 500 a quarter way into the season. But Celebrini and Smith and the others are so good. I think San Jose is going to fall off. I really do. I don't think defensively they're good enough to make the playoffs. I think Calgary's basically out of it. They're too far back right now. Vancouver is right now a 500 team. But, you know, Vegas is down a little bit. So
A little bit.
So I think this is going to be a heck of a race for this division title in the top three guaranteed spots. And the Kings are in good shape, but they've got to start winning some home games.
Yep.
But, you know, if you look at the big picture of the NHL, who would have thought that Anaheim, Pittsburgh, and Boston would all be teams in the first quarter that are top teams. It's a crazy season so far in the NHL.
We were talking a little bit before we sat down to record this, and I said, you know, there's whatever the number is, it changes every year, but however many teams are in a playoff spot at American Thanksgiving, whatever, 75, 80% of them finish the season in a playoff spot.
I think more than that.
Yeah. It's but I mean, my curiosity this season is, even if the number actually does land at about what it's expected to be, right? If by coincidence at the end of the year, because there's teams like Utah and Edmonton where they're tied today for 25 points. At the end of the year, if Utah makes it and Edmonton doesn't, statistically nothing will have changed. But my question is, how close will it be anyway? Right, like how deep into the season are we going to be when those final little X, Y, and Z's show up in the standings?
When you do that, yeah, then you start with the wild card. You know, mm-hmm. you're going to be a wild card team. You're going to be a top three team. Edmonton's numbers aren't that good yet, right? And they kind of did that last year where they had an awful October and then even November, and then they just, you know, the Kings finished ahead of them in the race last year. I think the Kings' home schedule and home record will get better. And I think a lot of so far has been schedule related. First game of the season. How many games has Colorado lost?
Yeah, I mean, one, I think. Yeah.
In regulation.
Okay, then just took a look at the strength of schedule. Early on, it was tough, all the road games. Even the last game against Boston, as we speak, five games on the Eastern time zone, come back home, have a day off, an extra day off was good, but then your home game is the second game of a back-to-back, where the team you're playing, Boston, has been on West Coast time longer than you have. So it's not really, again, a lot of people, there's always that fine line between excuse and reason. But I think it's a reason why, part of a reason why the Kings, I was really impressed with how the Kings played against Boston. The energy, that was a hard game to play. And if the PDO gets anywhere near where it should be, I think that this is going to improve the record just because of that.
Ken Holland addressed the home road splits when he spoke to the media this week. And what he said, and it's one of the tough parts about working in, you know, a public facing role in any industry, I suppose. What he said made perfect sense. It's just not satisfying. What he said was, listen, the team has been playing much better lately, but all of those games have been on the road. There's been more games on the road. So when they come home, hopefully the strong play will translate to more wins on the road. And that's just math. But that's just not fun to hear, right? It's
the numbers.
It makes sense. It's just not fun.
I've asked SportLogic who come up with some numbers that tell us the reason there's a difference between home and road. Mm-mm. They can't?
Yeah.
There's hardly. So that's what Jim Hiller's talking about. That's what Ken's probably saying. It's going to come back to that norm. And again, the only thing was save percentage. That was the one thing that was different home road. But I think the schedules had a little bit to do with that. Just opponents.
I mean, it has to have, because they have eight games at home and 14 games on the road. And two of those road trips were five games and six game road trips. Mm-hmm. Like, ipso facto, they've played more on the road. When they get on a roll, if it happens on the road, that's where the wins come from. And like I said, it makes total sense. It's just not satisfying.
You would want some glaring number to stand out so much so you could attack that. You could say, we have to improve here. They haven't found it.
Yeah. Having said that, most of the losses at home have been either overtime or one goal losses. I think a couple have been three goals. So it's not like they're getting blown out. But the power play obviously has cost them games at home. And early on, penalty killing was not good at home. It's going to straighten out. They're too good a team not to win their share of home games. That's the bottom line.
But I kind of want to address that point about them not getting blown out, because I find, just as a fan, it's almost, and I have had this disagreement with people over many years, I'd almost prefer to watch my team lose 9-1 than 5-4. Because in a 9-1 loss, you just throw your hands up and you go, "Bah, didn't have it. What are you going to do? It's a long season. C'est la vie. Oh, well." In a 5-4 loss, you're sitting there and you're going, like the Boston game, Jim, you know, we're talking about, you know, I saw tons of people say, was that goal stoppable or not? And I'm just, my attitude is I refuse to care because they only scored one goal. So even if that was the problem, I'm not thinking about it. If it's 9-1, you just go, everything went wrong. Who cares?
All I'm going to say is you've never been in a position where you've had the sell season seats, have you?
Fair enough.
Yeah. Good. You lose 9-1 the next game.
Yes.
But I have been in a position where I've had, it's not true. I watch every game on TV, even if I can't go. But as a fan, if the team is terrible because of the economics of the game and the way that, you know, the draft works and there's incentives, if your team is bad, there's a silver lining. If your team is not getting blown out but not great, then there's no silver lining. Then you're just, I guess we're not the worst, but you're still, you know, so it's hard to process, you know, I'm not entirely sure what's going wrong, but it's just not going perfect. Like, it's not as good as it could be. And it's what is a comparison is the thief of joy, right? So that's, it's just tough.
Yeah. I agree with Jim. I think the Kings played a pretty good game against Boston. And remember, they got a point, even though they scored one goal. They got a point. And they got a point in San Jose. So I thought they played really hard. The power play, to me, was the big difference. Obviously, we've talked about it. You don't score in a 5-on-3 for how long was it? A minute 20? It was a long 5-on-3.
Yes, it was. Yep.
Yeah.
Minute 20.
You could look at that and say there, you got 2 points if you score a power play goal there. So they got to get more power play goals. They've got to get that going.
And like in that game, if you score first, right?
If you, yeah.
The Kings are built on defense. So if you score first, it, you know, it just, it fits everything more so than other teams. For instance, I'm just thinking Colorado. Ah, they don't care. They're going to score 5 anyway. So it's a type of situation where I think Boston game, first power play, nothing. Couple of power plays in a row, they had something going. And then the game on the line power play, they couldn't get it going. Yeah. So they had to turn to that shorthander, ended up being the game tying goal. But at the critical late game situations, I think that's where the power play has been the most disappointing.
Yeah. I think the other thing, we haven't mentioned it, and I think this team has shown a lot of character and a lot of fight. They have points in what?
Yes.
5 games this year in which they've trailed by 2 goals or
yes.
more?
Leading the NHL in that.
Leading the NHL.
Yep.
I mean, so that's fantastic. It's not great that they're behind by 2 or 3 goals in a few of the games, but I think that ideally that you want to start playing with the lead, and then you can smother teams and strangle teams and put a knife in them and get those 2 points. But they've been behind by too many goals and too many games for my liking.
Expending of energy.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you're leading, you can go out that you're an offensive player. You're not. It's not even you're going out to check. When you're trailing, you're saving energy to go on offense.
Yeah.
To that point, the Kings lead the league in goals for with the extra attacker, which did not always been the case. Yeah, exactly. But weirdly enough, 5 goals with the extra attacker, 7 goals, 5-on-4 power play. Now they have a couple 5-on-3s and a 4-on-3, so I mean, it's not as dire as it sounds.
So maybe the Kings should pull their goalie on the power play.
There you go.
What do you think? I mean, there's the solution.
Yeah.
Go 6-on-5.
I like it.
So we've kind of covered a couple of answers for the last question, but I'll just wrap it up. What do the Kings need to do to clinch a playoff spot? And Jim, I'll just sort of go off book here because I see a lot of people talking about it, and I'm not sure I care, but the question about how many goals that have come from the pivot.
Yeah, yeah.
My attitude is if the goals are coming, why do I care where they're coming from? But it seems to have become a topic of conversation. Does it matter in terms of making the playoffs?
I think I'm going to just frame it in one of your other questions, that top 9.
Mm-hmm.
More balance, more distribution. You know, will Fogel get back on his game, which I think he is? Will Trevor Moore get the production where he has had it in the past? How long can Philippe Deneau be at 0?
And Turcotte.
So, you know, Turcotte, what do you expect? 7-8 goals from him? But now you're nothing from nothing leaves nothing. So, I think that's where it stems. So, if power play, we beat that.
Mm-hmm.
But getting that offensive production from more guys, every team wants balance. And, you know, Kempe and Fiala, and go back to what Jim Heller said last year, and this is, might be harsh, but with QB, he's got to realize that not all of his 28 goals that he hopes he's going to score are going to be highlight reel goals. Some of them have to be mucking goals. And I think he's drifted QB a little bit to that. Every goal has to be a great move, one-on-one and dangle. Maybe just drop your shoulder and drive to the net. You know, that type of mentality where you're just 6'5", almost 230 pounds. And has he been fine? I know the San Jose game. OT loss, shootout loss. QB was out. I don't know if he had a point, but he was really good.
Yeah,
he's that type of player that can really control a flow of a game and the energy of a game. But along with that, you need production and maybe finding a way to get more of the gritty goals along with the highlight reel goals.
Yeah,
it seems simplistic to say that, like, the thing that the Kings need to do better at is offense, but I just pulled it up because I was curious. In the 22 games they've played at even strength, and, you know, it doesn't account for the stumble out of the gate. Oh, no, I've just lost it. At even strength, the Kings are third worst at 1.99 goals per game and 1.81 goals against – or no, that's Seattle. Sorry, I'm juggling things. 2.16 goals against at even strength.
I'm going to make your day.
All right.
Until last game.
Yeah.
Third in the league. Expected goals.
No. Yeah.
And
Jim Hiller has talked about it, right? He said, we like how we're playing. The pucks are just not going in the net. And the obviously, John, the problem with that is that there's no solution baked into that.
These are not numbers compiled by Jim.
Right.
These are sport logic numbers.
Yeah.
This is an independent group. That is. So it's not like the Kings are tailoring their numbers to make mm-hmm. it to fit their own thought process. This is coming from a third party, so... If it does, it will turn around. It will get better.
I mean, as far as it has to.
Yes.
Otherwise, season gets real squirrely.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to get squirrely. They're too good a team.
Yeah.
Jim told me all training camp when I was the new guy, I'm still the new guy, that this team defends really well. They have good goaltending. That's what I've seen. And now that their penalty killing is really good, they're going to be tough to score on. But they're finding... They're still trying to find the chemistry and the balance offensively. Obviously, they had to sit Kuzmenko. Perry was hurt. Kopitar was hurt. So they've got to find the balance. And I'd like to see them shoot the puck more. I think they at times try to make the fancy play, the perfect play. I was watching the Florida game last night, Jim, and the Oilers scored two goals on just harmless, mm-hmm. terrible angle shots. I mean, just terrible goals on Bobrovsky, who obviously is a world-class goaltender. So sometimes, you know, you shoot the puck and you don't think you're going to score, you score. So I think they pass up too many shots, but it's probably confidence again. So, but I think they'll figure it out. I really do. They have too many good players.
I have no numbers to substantiate what I'm about to say, which is exactly what you're saying. I think in high-danger situations, the two-on-ones, three-on-twos, that's when the Kings don't shoot enough.
Yeah.
You know, their shot attempts... Recently, that a game, 95 shot attempts. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's through the roof.
That was in Toronto, right?
65 is phenomenal.
Yeah.
95 is world class. So, but when they get to that point where it becomes high danger, I think they're giving up a shot there. They're not taking it.
I don't know if I've talked to you about this or not yet, Jim, but I've been weirdly this season obsessed with the deserve to win-o-meter, which is just a made-up thing, John. But
okay.
Money Puck has, I don't know how the equation works, but they just run 1,000 simulations of every game based on the numbers, and then it spits out who deserved to win.
Okay.
What percentage of... it's, according to them, 64% accurate as far as the deserve to win-o-meter versus the result of
right.
the game. This season, the Kings are just way off the mark. They're winning games that the deserve to win-o-meter says they should have lost. They're losing games that they should have won. It's under 50% accuracy, and I don't get it.
I think it was The Athletic I was just reading recently where they did a quarter season expecting, it wasn't a power ranking, but they gave percentages of how they felt teams mm-hmm. would make the playoffs. And I was waiting to, you know, and they had the Kings at like 80%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really high. And I think that home record stuff will come around. The numbers will get back to normal as far as the shooting percentage and the save percentage. And you know, they do give themselves a chance, don't they, compared to a lot of teams? The
yeah.
Kings are in most every game, and that's, you know, I think it was the Winnipeg game. It was second period. I went to John, that's the Kings.
Yeah.
I said, that's the King. And that hasn't happened a lot this year, but in the last 10 games it has.
Yeah.
It is. That's the way the Kings played. Toronto, trailing all game. They were dominating the game. And I remember after the first period, I was chatting with someone because I wasn't doing the game. It was Ray Ferraro with John. And I was not worried. We were trailing every single way. They won nothing.
It was 2-0.
Yeah. So, and then I just knew we were going to win. We were playing too good.
I think we're at 10 games out of 22 now have gone to overtime. And I don't, this is just anecdotal. I don't have the actual number. I'm willing to bet at least eight of them were overtime when they came from behind to tie it up, as opposed to having the lead and giving up the lead.
Well, Minnesota was 3-0, right?
Yeah.
There was
Carolina, Toronto. Yeah. I mean, well, I guess Detroit, they gave
so
up the
all
lead.
So this team has a tough time scoring, and then we come back after more than anybody.
They're obviously talented enough to win these games. Like, they are a talented group.
Yeah.
Bizarro.
It is. Yeah. No, I mean,
I would have told you guys, on October 7th, that what was the first game, the 7th or 5th, whatever, the first game, that the Kings at November 23rd would have one home win, how would they be? Oof. You'd say, oh, man.
Bottom.
They're at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? They're in a playoff spot.
Yep.
and only a couple points out of first place. So,
and I find myself, John, like this format,
mm-hmm.
being more negative than I probably, you know, the numbers say... The record's decent, more than decent probably. The numbers, the analytics say more positive things. But, you know, maybe it's just, again, we're seeing a team that's gone to the playoffs 4 years in a row against the same team, and you know they're a good team, so you're expecting more. You're always expecting more.
I also think if Anaheim wasn't storming out to the front of the division, if they were at the back of the pack and the Kings were playing the exact same way and were in third place in the division because Edmonton and Vegas were off to strong starts.
Right.
No problem. But Anaheim's out to a huge lead. Seattle's out in front of them. Edmonton's nipping at the heels. And we know, to Jim's point earlier, John, that Edmonton had a slow start last year and came on strong. And so you're looking at the landscape and you're saying, this is unfamiliar. I don't know what to make of this. I'm now nervous because, we've been hearing about the Ducks and the Sharks for 3 or 4 years now, and all of a sudden they're kind of here, and it's, you know, it's a little bit of a collar tug. But, like, yeah, they are who they want to be with a few, you know, the exception of obviously the power play and offense. But, like, they are excelling at the areas that they focus on.
Yeah, and that's great. But I think that this entire NHL season – right now is one of the most bizarre that I've seen in a long time. Again, I mentioned Pittsburgh, Boston, Anaheim, teams that not many people had on their bingo card to go to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And those teams could miss. I don't think Anaheim's going to miss now the way they've gotten off. But, you know, Florida has struggled at times. Edmonton has struggled. Vegas has not, you know, been a terror this year.
Utah is really disappointed, right?
Or they're doing pretty good.
Second,
but they had a great run.
There you go.
Yeah. They had a great run, but lately they've fallen off.
Sorry, no, Utah.
So it's been a very strange season. And
St. Louis is near the bottom of the league.
St. Louis was the second wild card last year. So it's been a really bizarre season. Crazy.
It has been, and I've been saying it since game two of the Kings season that this is a weird one. Anyway, you guys never weird always. Thank you for your time, Jim and Pleasure. James. Appreciate it. Or John and James. Jim, Jesus. Too many John. J's. thanks for watching, Kings fans. We'll talk to you soon.